Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello, this is Joe Milligan, joined by Coach K, Ken Schultheis, the reversible jacket himself. I played that music just for you, Coach K. How you doing?
Hey, it's warming up, Joey. You know why it's warming up? Because we got IU and Butler going at it on Saturday, so it's starting to send some heat waves around the state. It'll be something that people will enjoy, and we've got Michael Lewis from Butler who's going to join us here in about 2 minutes. We're going to talk about Butler and the IU game. But one thing we might want to touch on, Joe, before we get to our first guest, is you've been doing some work putting together a new website for the Coach K and Joe Show.
Yeah, we decided it'd be a lot simpler for people to know where to log on to and to listen to the show. So we went ahead and put one together. It's right now it's www.coachkandjoeshow.weebly. That's weebly.com. Later next week, we'll be dropping the Weebly. I figured out how to do that, and we'll just have the coachkandjoeshow.com. But go there, and you can read our blogs. You know, we got blogs. I think we've even got Kurt the Gook selling talked into starting a blog as well. So, you know.
Yeah, we've got the blog, and we've got some forums that you can log on to and talk hoops or whatever it might be that you want to talk about, any kind of sports and teams, and it'd be a lot going on. And the nice thing will be for listeners, whether it's podcast or they're joining us live like today, it'll be just a little bit simpler to get on and listen to the show because you can go straight to that website. Hit the button, and you're going to be listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. So we're excited that we're getting that done and making it easier for our listeners to not only listen to the show but participate. And you know what? Let's just not wait any longer. Let's bring assistant Butler basketball coach Michael Lewis on, and let's start talking about the game. It's not the biggest game of the year, but it's the biggest game in the state on Saturday. Michael, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you guys?
All right, Michael, great to have you. Sorry about that pause. I was waiting to make sure we got Michael on. Hey, Coach, and I know you tell me not to call you Coach because you're not that old, but you've earned that badge and that title, so I'm calling you Coach. Coach Lewis, great to have you, and I'm sure you guys are prepped and finishing, dotting the I's and crossing the T's for the matchup against the number one ranked Hoosiers on Saturday.
Well, we're excited to get the opportunity to play tomorrow. I think obviously it's a great deal for college basketball fans, especially here in the state of Indiana. You know, the Crossroads Classic is fun to play in. We experienced it last year, and I know the city of Indianapolis will be hopping downtown tomorrow.
Well, Michael, when we talked earlier, before as we were getting prepared for you to come on the show, we talked yesterday and. And one of the comments that you made I thought was important, and this is how coaches have to look at these games. You know, it's December 15th. It's not the tournament. It is a big game from a standpoint of the fans and the state, but it needs to be kept in perspective.
Well, absolutely. I think both teams, we want to be playing our best basketball in March and if you're fortunate enough, into April. But this is a chance to test – ourselves against the best team in the country, and you know I feel very fortunate to coach basketball and get the opportunity to get paid to watch a lot of basketball, and I've been able to do that this year, and watching it, I don't think there's any question that Indiana's the best team in the country. They're playing at an extremely high level. They have the most talent in the country. They're playing at the highest level, and to be honest with you, I don't think there's, you know, the second place, it's not even close. I mean, I think they're head and shoulders above the rest of the country, and then there's probably a group of 5 to 7 teams in that second tier. But there is a wide gap between Indiana and the rest of the country right now, and they're playing very well.
Well, I'm sure that makes the Indiana fans happy, and since you are the career assist leader at IU and had a great career there, it's probably exciting for them to see you back on the floor at the same time Indiana's out there, even though it is as an assistant at Butler. But there's got to be at least some either feeling of angst or some type of emotional pull. You are a Butler Bulldog. You are an assistant coach. Those players are under your direction. You're connected and committed to Coach Stevens. But it's got to be a little bit nostalgic when you step on that court and IU's at least out there at the same time.
You know, I wish I had a dollar for every time I've been asked that here in the last couple of weeks. you know, but honestly, and maybe people don't understand this, it's really not going to be weird for me. Because first and foremost, I'm a competitor before anything else. And I was very lucky to have the opportunity to play in Indiana. Loved my 4 years, and I gave that university and the basketball program absolutely everything I had for 4 years. And it's never meant more to anybody else as it did me to wear that uniform and to, you know, put on the candy stripes and represent everything that Indiana basketball represents. And because I did that, I will forever be a Hoosier. I mean, there's no question, I'll forever be a Hoosier. But I also have a job to do. And the competitor in me will not get those lines mixed up tomorrow. No question. I work here at Butler, and I get paid to try to help Butler win, among other things, win basketball games. But, you know, before I was at Indiana and since then and now, the competitor in me will definitely be out tomorrow.
Well said, Michael, and I know that is true from every part inside of you. So let's get to that game. Last time we talked was early in the year. The season was just starting for you guys. I think you've had situations where you played Xavier, their quickness, their pressure really seemed to bother the Dogs, and it wasn't a good night for Butler. Then you go into the Maui Classic, and for pretty much 96% of the game, you destroy North Carolina. You do well. You did lose to Illinois, but, hey, Illinois is undefeated at this point. You got a nice win against Northwestern, a Big Ten team on the road. Where are you guys at mentally at this point in the season?
Well, mentally, I don't know. We just our guys are finishing up finals as we speak. We had half our guys taking a 9 o'clock final this morning and finishing up. So mentally, I'm not sure right now. They're probably fried, but luckily we got a little bit of time before tomorrow. But I think we're improving as a team. I think we went on the road and you know, we obviously got exposed at Xavier. I mean, I hadn't experienced a whipping like that in a while, and we got it. And then we, you know, we bounced back and we played some good basketball in Maui and kind of shored up a few things and so I think we're improving. I think you know, our guys are starting to adjust to their roles and having a pretty good understanding of what we're looking for out of each guy, and they're learning to play with each other, and we're starting to get our rotations down a little bit better from a substitution standpoint and situations of games, who we need in there and at what spots. And so we're improving. You know, defensively, obviously, we've got to continue to get better and clean some of that stuff up. We do have the ability to be explosive offensively with our ability to shoot the basketball, but we've got to be able to find some other things when sometimes those shots aren't falling like we would expect them to.
Well, you know, one of the things that did impress me, Michael, and this is just being a coach from my time on the court, was the fact that you got exposed at Xavier, and I like how you said that, and a lot of things came out there, but the team came back, and obviously the communications they're dialed in with the coaches, and you're able to bounce back and come back and play good basketball. So now you come in, this is where I see Butler. I think you guys are going to be well prepared. Maybe a team that will not be any better prepared when they start that game. But as you go in against IU, the number one team in the country and has been for most of, well, since the beginning of the season, you're on Bankers Life floor. I believe Butler has won 3 out of the last 4 games on that floor with IU. And I see IU is very quick, very athletic, and a lot of depth. And that's where I get some concern for Butler, and I don't know how you guys are going to look at it, but from a depth factor, it seems like IU can bring 3, 4, 5 guys off that bench. And so foul trouble, I would think, becomes important for you to keep your key players on that court, because IU can interchange a little bit throughout the game.
Well, I think that's one of their big strengths. It's also why they're the best team in the country, is they have that depth. It's something that we're trying to, on our end, develop some more depth so we have some more options. But obviously with the way they like to get up and down the court and the different waves of players that they can bring in, that is obviously a concern of ours. And how, can we match that or combat that is going to be a key to the game. And so we've got some ideas, whether we can go out and execute them. We'll find out tomorrow. But there's not many opportunities you get to play the number one team in the country. But vice versa, we've got 5 guys on our roster that played on the final Monday night of college basketball for it all. So that kind of goes both ways, and I know our guys are excited to play.
You know, people can't forget that your big man, Adam Smith, he's been through the wars. He's got a little big-time experience. He knows what it's all about. And so I got to believe that he feels pretty excited about the fact that he's going up against the number one team, yes, but he's also going up against arguably the best player in college basketball in Cody Zeller.
Yeah, and I think that's where you kind of rely on your experiences. And he's started in a national championship game. I don't think you can place a value on that experience of what 5 of these guys have done on playing on that final Monday night. He's played in big games. We have other guys that have played in big games, and they're competitors. They have pride. I think that's why you saw us come back and compete in Maui the way that we did after getting thumped at Xavier. These guys have some pride in the way that they play, and I think they're going to have some pride in stepping out on the floor against Indiana tomorrow.
Hey, Michael, I think there's no doubt that if you watch tapes of Indiana, you watch games, you can't avoid this, the runouts, the transition off the made baskets, and even the missed baskets. If Cody's not rebounding the ball, and IU's taking it out after a made shot, I mean, he's gone. He's gone down the floor. He's running the middle. For people that may not understand, that is instinctive, but it's also practiced and worked on, but he's good at it. So it puts that extra burden on the defense. We used to say when you were in high school, you may not remember, the best time to score is after the other team scores. IU really understands that, and when their opponent makes a basket, they're gone, and they're down the other end of the floor, and a high percentage of the time they've been scoring right away. How do you look at that? What are you telling your guys about that?
Well, I'm scared to death. First, it makes me sick. Cody's a freak from an athletic standpoint to be 7 foot tall and to be able to change into the floor the way that he does, so fluidly. I mean, you just don't see guys his size that can run the way that he can run. And he's got great hands. He finishes. I mean, there's a reason why he's being talked about as the number one pick in the draft, and he's very deserving of all that talk. So he is a major concern of ours. But then you just go down the line. We were talking about their depth. You go down the line. I think I have as much respect for Jordan Halls as any other college player in the country outside of somebody wearing a Butler uniform. I mean, what he has done and the player that he has made himself is remarkable. From where he was in the high school to the type of player that he is, today, he's worked and worked and worked and made himself into a very good college basketball player. And then you look at the athleticism of Oladipo and Sheehy and Yogi Ferrell adds a complete different dimension for those guys this year. And it just goes on down. Like you said, they just keep bringing guys in off the bench that are good players. So when you look at it from that standpoint, it can be very intimidating. But That's why you play the game. You know, and I think that's the beautiful thing about college basketball is any team in the country, they don't have to be better than the next team 365 days out of the year. You have to be better than that team for 2 hours. And when you break it down to that, and you break it down to halves of games, the intervals between timeouts, you know, if you can break it into four-minute games, however you want to do it and however you want to see it, then it's not as intimidating. But there's no question that we've got a tall task tomorrow.
Michael, I've got from listeners.
Joe, I was almost forgetting you were here. I've listened to some podcasts, and I never get a chance to hear you talk, so I'm just glad you're still on the show.
Well, you know, you try to host a show with this guy. I just have to butt in wherever I get a chance. Got a comment and a question for you.
Sure.
From I think two guys you probably are familiar with. The first is a comment from Kevin Cartwright. along with being the all-time assist leader at Indiana University, a little-known fact is that Michael is the all-time leading receiver in the now-defunct SFL Sunday Football League behind Jasper High School in the 90s.
Oh, yes. I was a monster back on those old soccer fields. Monster. Absolute monster.
And then we've got a question from John Bodorf, better known as Bots Magic to a few people.
My man, Bots.
If Michael was the IHSAA commissioner like his grandfather Gene Cato, what is one change he would make permanent to Indiana basketball?
Well, he's opening the door for me there, isn't he? you know what? I'm glad that Bots is listening. And you know, when I was a kid growing up, those are the guys that I looked up to, you know, that sectional team that won the sectional there, you know, they were always very good to me, and I was always the little kid hanging around practice and messing with those guys. And I think that's part of you know, playing basketball in this state is you grow up and you try to be like other guys. And you know, Bardoff was part of that team with Steve Huffman and Scott Yarbrough and Jason Albrand, and those were all guys that I looked up to. And now he's lobbing a softball to me here to butt in. But obviously, I played in a one-class tournament. It was a great experience. Is it the best thing for high school athletics today? I don't know. I'm not in with all the financial statistics and all that type of stuff. But I do know it was very special to play in, very special to be a part of. And you know, I've been lucky in the fact that I've got to play in a lot of different venues and a lot of different situations. And if I could go back and play one game, we'd be playing over in Huntingburg. It's a special environment and a special thing to be a part of, and something I'll always remember.
Yeah, I always felt like they took a holiday away from me when they did away with the Southridge sectional. I mean, that was a holiday. You know, even being a little kid, if Jasper lost, you still went to the games. You know, and just everybody went, and you know, people would call WITS and offer tickets, and people would want tickets, and going to some of these sectionals is kind of sad to see right now.
Well, it is, but I think people in Indiana are spoiled. You know, I move around in recruiting and watch high school games all over the country, and you know, even though it's not what it was, you know, kids growing up and playing in Indiana today still have it a lot better than kids in all these other states. But you can't. I don't think you'll ever be able to go back and duplicate what was going on in the one-class tournament, even if you return to a one-class tournament. I think there's a lot of, you know, things that have happened that maybe the interest won't ever be at that level again.
Yeah, I would say, Michael, that you know, when you let a generation go by, and basically we have in high school basketball here, that things are changed, and they're probably changed for good. But, you know, it's still a great game, and that's why Saturday's game with Butler and IU draws so much attention, even though it's on December 15th. And before we let you go, I do want to touch base on one more thing. You talked about Jordy Halls, and he is. He's the prototypical Indiana kid, can shoot, works his butt off, smart on the floor, much like you were. Much like many kids that have come through Indiana University, and I hate to say it, Purdue, Butler, and different universities here. But one of the things that I think is an interesting dynamic to the game, and you guys will have to, I'm sure you guys are getting ready to figure out how you're going to handle it. You've got the quickness and speed of Yogi Ferrell, and you've got Jordy Hull setting up on the outside. And here comes this penetration coming hard on Yogi Ferrell. And from my point of view, he knows exactly where he's going, and he knows exactly who he's kicking it to. So you have this guy setting up on the three-point line. You've got Yogi penetrating. How are you guys looking at that, defending it, and are you ready for that in that half-court situation?
Well, I don't know if we're ready for it. We won't know till tomorrow. But I think, you know, when you look at a team like Indiana and all the weapons that they have, you can't stop it all. And I think there's times you can try to get too complicated. Well, when they do this, we're going to do X. And when they do this, we're going to do Y. We've got to – you said it earlier. It's a game on December 15th. We've got to continue to be who we are. Will we make some adjustments and changes? Absolutely. But I don't think we can completely go away from who we are and what we're trying to work towards being at the end of the year. And so we're going to be pretty basic in what we're trying to do. We're not going to deviate a ton from our systems. And when you're preparing for somebody like Indiana with all that talent, you got to kind of pick and choose. You know, what are you willing to give up? What are you going to focus on stopping? And that's, you know, dependent on your own personnel. You know, do you think you have the personnel to stop player A or, you know, stop player B and try to work within each matchup where you may or may not have an advantage and what you think is most beneficial for your team? So, obviously, they're good enough that you can't stop at all. You got to hope that the things that you choose to do work and that your guys go out and execute but I think at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, you got to go out and play hard. And I think that's something that Indiana is doing better than anybody in the country, is they're playing with such an effort on both ends of the floor, and they force a pace of play that is hard to withstand over 40 minutes. You know, I think you've seen, you know, snippets in games of even a Coppin State or something, you know, being able to play with them for 4 or 8 minutes. But it's the constant, and that's where their depth comes into play. Can you withstand everything that they're trying to do on both ends of the floor for 40 minutes?
And yeah, there's no doubt. And as that wave, those waves of pressure come on you, you've got to handle that. Those initial waves out front, take care of the ball, make that extra pass, because I think, I mean, just from my standpoint in watching some of the games with IU, if you can find that extra pass, you may find an opportunity at a great shot. The problem is you got to have poise and control out there. I know you're going to have your team ready. I'm excited for it. I know it's just December 15th. Nationally televised. It can't hurt you on the recruiting side. Thank you for taking the time being with us, Michael. I should be up in the Indianapolis area towards the end of the month, the first of the next month, and hope to get over and watch you guys practice. I'm a big fan of the way the Bulldogs play basketball.
Well, we'd love to have you. Just let me know anytime you're in the area. And the one thing that is exciting about tomorrow is it's just good to be relevant in the college basketball landscape, and it should be a great deal tomorrow.
Well, thanks for being with us, and tell your lovely wife and kids and father and mother Merry Christmas, and just have a great Saturday on December 15th.
All right, we'll see you. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Good talking to you. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Walt Ferber. We'll talk a little Jasper Wildcat hoops. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's from Jasper Today, Milligan Communications, and the Milligan family, Joe, Liz, Ryan, Reed, Reese, and Ray.
Little buddy, hold up, man. I'm not talking to you. You keep going. I want to tell you, man, I was sorry about having to practice today.
Don't be sorry.
Don't you understand, man? If you don't cool it out there, you're going to end up getting yourself killed.
If I cool it, I won't be helping you guys get ready for the next week's games. Got it?
I got it.
He's just a showboat, man. That's all he's about.
He's just doing his job, Jamie. Can't it?
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. Coach, do you like the Rudy theme I've kind of got going this week, or what?
Joe, that was so awesome. And I'll tell you what, I just got chills because I was thinking about all the young men I coached and when I played, and even out in the professional life, in business and whatever it might be, where people in a certain position who are wanting to coast or take it easy or not be pushed, get upset with the people that are trying to make them better and get better at the same time. And that's a great little snippet from Rudy. And believe me, that happens more than you know on the athletic level as well as the private sector level. Yeah, that was a great piece you put in there.
Yep, and next up we've got Hall of Fame play-by-play announcer for the Jasper Wildcats, WITZ's Walt Berber. Walt, how you doing?
Did we lose him?
No, here he is. Okay.
Okay. Hey, hello, it's great talking to you guys.
Yeah, but dummy.
Hey, Walter Berber, we thought we lost you there. We were a little nervous because we want to talk some Jasper hoops with you.
You got to hit the right buttons, and you know the guy running the board's not always the greatest. So,
well,
don't be so hard on yourself. You're trying to do more than one thing, and I know that's multitasking at a high level for you. So, hey, Walt, it's good to have you on. Hey, Jasper's coming off a weekend where they went 1-1, had a physical game at Memorial. I listened to that game. Listened to you and Terry call the game, and the running theme against Memorial was physical, physical, no foul called, physical, physical, and then they came back with what was probably, at least from what I could tell, a tired, not sloppy, but not a real energy game, but a win against Bedford North Lawrence, both teams being tired. Let's jump back to that Memorial game just quickly and talk a little bit about the Cats' performance on the road.
Well, you know, you're going in to a tough place there at Evansville Memorial. Coach Wilgus always has those guys ready to go. And it was kind of a matchup of two physical ball clubs. Coach Wilgus likes his team to play physical. And honestly, with the way that this Wildcat team is set up this year, they really don't mind playing physical either. So it was a great ball game. It was a good test. And I thought Jasper did a lot of stuff very, very well. And, you know, in the end, they hit a shot in the end. They can win the ball game, but they're starting to get some offensive output. The Geese are looking good for the offensive side. And Messier had himself a tremendous ball game against Evansville Memorial. His penetration to the basket was causing Memorial a lot of problems. And I think this year with the Wildcats, that might be a prototypical game where ugly is beautiful. You know, you don't have a pure score like you had last year in Bagley as he's off at Lincoln Trail. But, you know, that you never like moral victories. But when you go into Evansville Memorial and have a shot at the end, there were a lot of good things to come out of that for the Wildcats.
Yeah, absolutely. And having been in that venue at both of my coaching stops, it's a tough place to play, period, and to win. And fortunately, we won several there, but it is a tough setup game. So you come back on the double weekends, and double weekends are tough, especially early in the year and then again late in the year. But early in the year, you come back. You want your kids to come back and play at least to the point of getting a victory at home. They were able to do that. Bedford North Lawrence came in after a really tough loss the night before. JASP was able to pull it back together coming off their loss at Memorial and went into Cabbie and got a victory.
Well, yeah, that was no doubt. That was a very, very nice win for the Wildcats. They were Bedford down a little bit after the Columbus East ball game the night before, but Jasper had a little revenge there. Bedford had defeated Jasper last year on a 55-foot heave at the buzzer. So Jasper, it was a nip-and-tuck ball game, and the thing that I liked, the defense has been very, very good all year, and in the fourth quarter, Jasper had a one-point advantage going in, but they really shut Bedford North Lawrence down. The Jasper defense allowed only 3 fourth-quarter points for the Stars, and it took what was a one-point game and turned it into a double-digit victory.
Yeah, and you make a great point, Walt, and I will agree with you. Having seen the Harrison game live and then listened to the last couple games, I think defense would be possibly a strong suit for the Cats, and not necessarily because they're going to be great defensively as far as their footwork and things, but because they're so physical and because they have the wide bodies out there, they're able to take up a lot of space. They're able to take a lot of passing lanes away. They're able to bump the cutters with just a little bit better physical presence that knocks them off the path they want to take. And when you do that throughout a game, what happens to the offense is they'll begin to not run their normal patterns. They'll begin to veer off, and they're not getting to the spot when they need to get to the spot, and they're not getting to the spot where the play needs to get set up. So I think that defensively, that's part of that ugly is beautiful or winning ugly instead of losing pretty. That physical nature is going to help them on the defensive end without a doubt, and if they put forth the effort, it's going to be the thing that I believe keeps them in a lot of games this year.
Oh, I would agree with that, and not only is it the physicality, you know, the guys have a great weight training program. They are very physical, but they got some gray matter between the ears, Coach. They play smart team defense. They help one another out. They change up their defenses extraordinarily well, and, you know, as I always learned from you back in your coaching days, offense can be a variable, but defense is always a constant.
Yeah, I love that, Walt. You should have played for me. That's absolutely correct. You can always play good defense. There's no reason not to. You can you don't always shoot well every night, but you can always play good defense, and you can always block out. And those are two keys. Hey, Walt, as you look, what we got coming up for the Wildcats?
Well, it's another double weekend. Coach Allstott's Boonville Pioneers coming in to the Cabbie tonight, and my big pre-Christmas present every year, Jasper Southridge will go at it, and for the Southridge fans, it'll be the last time they get to see that game, unless something happens that we don't know, in the historic venue of the Cabbie O'Neill Gymnasium.
You know, that's a tough weekend because Boonville, you've got a conference foe there, and even though Boonville is not what I would call a real good team this year, over the history of that matchup between Jasper and Boonville, that game's always a tough one, and Boonville sneaks out with wins, and I think that happens because there's so much emotion getting ready for that Southridge game. So it really does make it tough on Jasper, but it also gives them kind of a preview of how you got to prepare mentally for the tournament when you come up, and you might have a Friday-Saturday semifinal championship game that happens in the sectional. So it's a good weekend for preparation down the line, and it's a good place to be at the end of that weekend to say, here's where we are going into the holidays. And as always, I know you'll do a great job calling that game. And we're certainly happy that you were with us, and we hope you'll keep coming back because I love talking hoops with Walt Ferguson.
I love talking hoops with you, too. Enjoy.
All right, Walt, good to see you. Merry Christmas to you and your family. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're talking with Big10.com, Tom Dienert. We're going to be talking Big Ten hoops and much more. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Think of your website as an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a website that doesn't produce results. Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help whip your site into shape. If you don't have a site yet, let Idea Fusion Media walk you through the entire process, from domain registration and hosting setup to the design and implementation of your site. To see how Idea Fusion Media can help you, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. Again, that's IdeaFusionMedia.com. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you.
Let me tell it to you as clean as I can. We have 95 players here, so accomplished as athletes in high school. We gave them full scholarships to the best football program in the country. NCAA regulations allow us to dress just 60 for home games, which means at least 35 scholarship players are going to be watching the games from the stands. So if any of you has any fantasies about running out of that stadium tunnel with your gold helmet shining in the sun, you best see them right here. Of you 15 dreamers out there, maybe we'll keep one or two.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and with us we have Big Ten Network senior writer Tom Deanhart. Tom, let's get right to it. What's your impression of Daryl Hazel, Purdue's brand-new football coach?
Yeah, I guess nobody knows for sure. 2 years, awfully impressive work at Kent State, obviously. I mean, that program had not been to a bowl game since 1972. Joe, that's when back when you and I were still playing with our Tinker Toys, buddy. So, again, I think Hazel's got this team in a bowl game for the first time. I mean, like I said, since 1972. And they're only one win away, guys, from going to a BCS bowl, obviously, if they win that Mac Tyler game over in Northern Illinois. So we'll see. I think he has a chance to obviously energize a program that needs a lot of energizing. The big key is going to be seeing how he builds his staff here.
You know, Tom, it's Coach K here. Great to have you back on the show. You're just one of the favorite guys I love talking to because of your knowledge and the way you put things out there for people to understand. I've been following you on Twitter, just looking at the different things you're talking about. And I wanted to ask you, for these second-tier Big Ten teams, and I know nobody likes to think of their team as a second-tier Big Ten team, but in football, but I account IU among that group, Illinois right now, teams like that. How do they get up to that next level? I know they got to recruit. I understand that. Is the junior college route the way they go in the short term? And are there good enough players out there to bring in and move them up the line a little bit?
I don't think junior college players are the way to go. Honestly, I think a lot of times the die is cast for these schools, probably from here to eternity, honestly. I mean, just using Purdue as an example, I mean, from time to time with the right coach, the right quarterback, a few playmakers here or there, we've seen the program rise up and enjoy some pretty good, strong success. But history shows us that it's never really sustained. And honestly, I don't think that's probably ever going to change. You know, it's a truthful opinion. I think long after all three of us are dead, you can look at top 25 college football polls, and they're going to largely feature the same core of 10 to 15 schools with a few moving in and out each year, depending on, again, like I said, circumstances, the right coach, a few right players. So, you know what, I love college athletics, guys, but it is truly the one sport where it has probably the most unlevel playing field of any sport out there we watch as fans. I mean, the NFL, at least you can say, is an Indianapolis Colts fan. You know what? My team really does have as good a chance to win the Super Bowl as the New York Giants or the Chicago Bears or any other massive market team. You can't say that in college sports. I mean, like I said, we'll have a few anomalies every once in a while, but for the most part, budgets are so different between these schools. Stadium sizes are so different. Local radio rights are so different. So, again, it's never going to be an even playing field, Coach K. I know this is a long answer, but, again, JC guys certainly aren't going to get you anywhere you want to go and stay for an extended period of time.
Okay. And you know, let's talk about a couple of the Big Ten schools. You know, we're coming into the bowl period, and the teams we know are going, and some of them could have gone and couldn't because of NCAA sanctions. But I wanted to ask you about Michigan State. Michigan State seemed to fall off a little bit this year. My opinion, is this trend, you know, just a one-year aberration, or is this something that Michigan State needs to do some work for the next couple years to find their way back to where, you know, they were playing at what I call elite Big Ten level?
Yeah, they won 11 games each of the 2 years before this year, and 6-6, Joe and Coach K. I mean, it's not an overstatement to say this is the most disappointing team in the Big Ten this year, without a doubt. And think about this, too. This always amazes me. The BCS era started in 1998. Every Big Ten school but three have gone to a BCS bowl game since then. Of course, Indiana has never gone to a BCS bowl and during the BCS era here. Northwestern hasn't. Remember, the Rose Bowl was before that, 1995. And then Michigan State, and then the other one's Minnesota, so there's four. And to think Michigan State is in the same company as Indiana, Northwestern, and Minnesota when it comes to that, having never gone to a BCS bowl, is pretty amazing to consider the resources, the facilities, and everything up there. So, you know what, defense wasn't the problem at Michigan State this year. It was the offense. And D'Antonio has said they're going to tweak their offense. They're not going to certainly overhaul, but they're going to tweak it. I think they may even open up quarterback, and I think they may want to get more of an athletic guy there, maybe have some more designed quarterback runs if you believe what you hear and what you read at this point. So I think they'll be back. They're not going to fall off the ladder as much. But you know what, guys? Here's something I'd love to get your opinion on. I saw a story today from Minneapolis about TCF Bank Stadium. You know, they sell alcohol there during games, obviously. They made, I think, what, $9 million? No, it was $9 million. What do you guys think of universities doing that? And do you think we're going to see more and more schools eventually doing that, selling alcohol at their various venues during games?
I'll tell you what. You know, we're both from Jasper, Indiana, so that's tough.
Well, I know what your answer is.
Well, no, I'll tell you what, I've got mixed feelings about that because I know that some schools, colleges, universities, you know, they play off campus, so they've been able in their venues, been able to sell alcohol. I know in Evansville, where I live now, the University of Evansville plays in the Ford Center downtown. They do sell alcohol there. I think a couple of the other schools in their conference have done that because they play off the campus. But, you know, that's a tough question because, you know, when you bring that in to the mix with all the emotion that is involved in a college atmosphere, you know, I don't know. But, again, when you're talking about the money you just talked about,
yeah,
are we putting – the NCAA is kind of – they're kind of a flip-flopper, in my opinion, and I don't want anybody to get mad at me at the NCAA, but they're flip-floppers. On one hand, they're talking about integrity and character,
yep,
and doing the right things and saying the right,
yep,
things. And on the other hand, they're selling out for the big money. So I'm not real fond of the idea of putting that kind of emotion, that kind of passion, and mixing it together with alcohol. Joe, what do you think?
About that? Yeah, yeah. Well, what do you think? I mean, it's crazy. I mean, and get this too, Joe.
Yeah.
It would cut sales off at halftime, and they still made $9 million. And this was at Minnesota, guys. Imagine,
oh, wow,
if you do this at Ohio State or Michigan, where they truly get massive crowds. I think those would be the last schools that do it. I do think we're going to see, I wouldn't doubt, you know, the Indianas, the Purdue's, the Illinois, the schools that, again, traditionally need some type of lure to get fans. I wouldn't be shocked if we see more of those type of schools do it. And eventually we'll see the quote-unquote big boys be the last holdouts in this. I could be wrong, but that's just my guess. What do you think, Joe?
Well, you know, the first stadium on a college campus that I'd ever been to that actually sold alcohol was a Nippert Stadium when the Boilers played the University of Cincinnati, I think, in
2001. It was 2001.
Yeah. It'd be John Goldsberry's freshman year, and it was an interesting deal there. But you know, I don't know if like West Virginia is selling it now, and I don't know if you've ever with my daughter being a Marshall person. That's some crazy fan base. I don't know if you need to mix alcohol with a West Virginia fan.
You know, I still come back to this the NCAA and you know, Bill Sahm, who was with the NCAA for about 20 years, he comes on and helps us a little bit as a contributor with high school football, but he's also talked about coming on and answering at least NCAA perspective questions, how they looked at it when he was there. And this is another one of those questions I got to ask. On one hand, we're talking integrity, character, doing the right thing, amateurs, and all that stuff, and we want to nail people for selling a jersey that was theirs or a ring that was theirs. But, man, bringing the millions of dollars and Bud Light and Budweiser and whoever else, you put it out there. Who knows? We might have them. We might have them showing the athletes on the field at some point in commercials. So I got a problem with it, and I know people are going to say, what are you, a prude? I'm not a prude, but I know what it's like when you take emotion and passion of that amount and you mix that with alcohol. It's like driving a speeding car. It's not good.
Man.
You've already got the tailgates going on. You've already got the pre- and post-game stuff. But when they walk in the stadium, there's just a little bit of normalcy. I know some people are sneaking some stuff in, but for the most part, you're talking about some big explosive games with, like you said, Tom, 100,000 people in the stadium at Michigan or wherever. Wow. Ohio State versus Michigan. Wow.
I know Joe never snuck in the Ohio State Stadium.
I got
to ask you guys, did you see some of the information we're trying to gather as far as getting fans' input on divisional alignment? I don't know if you guys have given any thought to Big Ten divisional alignment. It's a hot button topic. How's the Big Ten going to divvy up these 14 schools? They're going to do it geographically. They're going to try to keep competitive balance. We've got some interesting stuff on our website. We're trying to get fans' input and what they think, what alignments do they like. And again, I don't know if you guys have given them much thought or looked at what we have on the site, but it's going to be an interesting bridge for the conference to really have to cross at some point here.
Well, I saw where you guys were putting that out there for people to put thought to. And Tom, just real quickly, and I know you probably got some more thinking to do on what are your overall thoughts about the alignment process and how they look at that?
I'm just overall expansion sort of excites me, and I am a traditionalist in a lot of ways. I understand we have to move forward and everything continues to change, and you may as well be at the forefront of the change and leading it instead of reacting to what's going on around you. So the Big Ten is certainly doing that. I tell you what, I sort of like the geographic model. That's one of the options on the side, east-west. And just to sort of quickly give the listeners an idea, it's basically almost drawing a line down the middle of the state of Indiana, and they have Purdue in the west and Indiana in the east. So, again, just sort of think in your head with the west is, for instance, with Purdue, Illinois, you know, Northwestern, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Nebraska, and everybody else obviously being in the east is sort of the geographic model. And initially when this expansion was announced a few weeks ago, there was some speculation that the Big Ten was going to keep Leaders and Legends. What they were going to do then is just put Rutgers and Maryland in the Leaders division with Purdue and Indiana, and then flip Illinois over to the Legends division. So, again, that was something that people thought may happen as well. But everything's on the table at this point. And, again, people are considering, decision makers, I'm sure, are going to consider, again, rivalries, geography, competitive balance, among other things, when they're making this decision. And guys, once we get to 14, don't you think we're going to have two more teams to probably have to slip in at some point when the conference gets to 16?
Yeah. And that's what I was wondering. You know, Tom, with all this upheaval in conferences, you've got the seven Catholic schools in the Big East. Can you give our listeners just a sense of just real basically what's going on and where this is going to shake out, at least.
I wish I knew, Coach K. I don't know. I mean, every day you go on the computer, you look at Twitter, you watch ESPN, you read your paper, and there's something going on with conferences. I mean, it's now the Big East stuff is obviously dominating the headlines here. This is huge news. Not really unexpected. People have talked about a Catholic basketball conference for years, it seems like. And now finally maybe at our doorstep. So, again, this is all big for college fans and the future of the sport and how it's organized. So just stay tuned. I mean, I don't think anybody knows what the next move is going to be or how this is all going to end up. It's all being painted before our very eyes. But the ACC, you know, I think that's the next conference to really watch here. Of course, with the Big East blowing up, looks like Notre Dame and Louisville are going to start in the ACC a year earlier next year. And, again, but what's the future of the ACC, guys, if the Big Ten gets a Virginia and a North Carolina? I mean, what's the Big 12 going to do here? They only have 10 schools right now. Is the Big 12 really going to stay 10 schools? I mean, I don't know. It just seems like the ACC is the one conference that still, to me, remains the most vulnerable because it's not a football-oriented conference. And most of these decisions are made based on football more so than basketball.
Yeah, and
let me say real quick, too. Louisville going to the ACC, you guys obviously are close to Louisville. I think that's a mistake. Again, this is about football. It's not about basketball. And, again, to me, the ACC is not a strong basketball, a football conference. I still think Florida State and Clemson are probably going to leave. Again, I talked about North Carolina, maybe Virginia Tech go to the SEC. I mean, again, if I'm Louisville, I think it would have been much more prudent to go to the Big 12.
Well, and for our listeners who may not know, from a revenue standpoint, football is the big driver for colleges, universities, and being in competitive conferences that share big bowl revenue, contracts for TV, and getting people into the stadium is hugely important. And this thing is a mess that I never thought I would even be seen, and I don't know what about these buyout clauses and penalty clauses of money where these universities can just throw that money around, and then they want to call us for donations. Hey, Tom, last question for you. Get your thoughts on before we go to break. Barry Alvarez, Wisconsin, loses their coach. He's going to coach the team in the bowl game. Great coach, did a great job, athletic director. Bonus clauses if they win the bowl game as a coach. I mean, what's going on? Is he went back on his side? I mean, what's really going on there with him jumping in?
Well, I mean, I think it's good, honestly. It's sort of it maybe galvanizes the football program and gives it some sense of cohesiveness with the living legend, the icon, of Barry Alvarez taking over the reins here for a few weeks. So that'll help, and I think it's helped ticket sales. I think it's helped make the Rose Bowl more relevant and exciting, at least I think so personally. You had a five-loss Wisconsin team, and now you got Barry Alvarez on the sidelines going for his fourth Rose Bowl win, which I think, guys, would set a record, or tie Woody Hayes, I think. But again, I think under these circumstances, which aren't good, this was about as good as you can get as far as a counterpunch and a placeholder while they find a head coach. And that's going to be fascinating who they end up getting to run this program. There was a report last night that they're going to interview Mike Riley of Oregon State, 59-year-old Mike Riley with no Midwest connection. So who knows? It just seems like a long shot for a guy like that. Al Golden at Miami supposedly is out. I know Mel Tucker, the defensive coordinator at the Jaguars, is still very involved, ex-Badger football player, part of Barry Alvarez's first recruiting class. Maybe Brad Childress, maybe Craig Bohl, head coach of North Dakota State. Paul Rhodes sounds like he may be slipping off the radar a little bit, the Iowa State coach. But again, Alvarez has got a big decision to make. So he's got a lot on his plate, not just trying to, stay involved football-wise, but trying to make, which is always the most important hire in any university, in a lot of respects, is finding a football coach.
So Tom, if Wisconsin doesn't find the guy they want, is it a stretch to think that Barry would take the the rollover for a short term until they get the guy they want?
He will not.
Coach for a year?
No, I don't think he'll do that. Some people thought that, raised that idea, but it doesn't sound like that's going to be an option. I mean, you never say never, but everything I hear, people I talk to, is that is something Alvarez does not want to do. Even for 1 year, he doesn't want to step down. He just wants to hop in, hop out with his Rose Bowl, and that's it. I think you're going to see somebody get hired here shortly. I think we have a recruiting dead period coming up here shortly, maybe starting next week. And I got a feeling we may get a Wisconsin head coach maybe the next 7 days here. I don't think this is going to last until the new year. I could be wrong, but I wouldn't be shocked. Again, they try to get somebody in place before this recruiting dead period hits, which I want to say, I know it's before Christmas. It's probably about a week from now. So, again, just keep that on your radar. We may hear something as far as the head coach at Wisconsin goes in the next week.
All right, man. Great stuff as always. Love following you on Twitter and at the Big10Network.com. Tom Dienert, wonderful job, and happy holidays, Merry Christmas, New Year to you, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, Coach K, Joe, you guys too. Merry Christmas, happy holidays to everybody in Southern Indiana, and enjoy the holidays, enjoy your family, and thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? Well, team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team. We've had over 5,000 listeners through our first three shows, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you. Happy holidays. Coach K here, and from my family, Janet, Josh, Paige, and Scott, to your family, here's wishing you a very Merry Christmas. And yes, Christmas includes Christ. He's the reason for the season. And have a blessed new year.
What's your problem? What's your problem?
Last practice of the season, and this asshole thinks it's a Super Bowl.
You just summed up your entire sorry career here in one sentence. If you had a tenth of the heart of Rutgers, you could have made All-American. As it is, you just went from the third team to the prep team. Go on, get out of here.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Dienert of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, we're back, and people might have thought that was a little snippet from Rudy, but that was really me and Joe and our next guest, the good man, Chris Goodman, about what we're going to talk about here. So Joe got thrown down to the prep team, and Chris Goodman, good to have you back on the show. It's been a couple weeks, and we're back in with you, and now we're talking hoops in the Evansville area.
Yeah, you know, good to be here. We got our home team Friday game of the week coming up tonight, which is Washington at Bossy, which should be pretty good. We debuted last week and did a pretty good game between Castle and Harrison, so it's always neat. This time of year, you know, those football players that are getting on the basketball court are getting all the rust off, and it's just a wonderful time of year. I'm always a big hoops fan, so when I moved to the state of Indiana, I think about 20 years ago, that's one of the things I was the most excited about, is you always heard in different states from an outsider looking in that the basketball is just phenomenal, and I think that's something that just hasn't changed here since I've been here.
Well, I think the high school basketball in Evansville is pretty solid this year, and we'll talk about Bossy and Jaquan Lyle in a couple minutes. I just live a block up from the back doors of Bossy's gymnasium, so I'll probably come on over and watch that game and also watch a former coaching competitor of mine in Gene Miller. But first thing I want to talk to you about is we've had some news happen over the course of the week. Mike Wilson, longtime coach at Evansville North for the football Huskies, he decided to step down and walk away.
Yeah, you know, I heard about that, and it doesn't surprise me because he was the dean of the coaches. He's one of the guys that was probably around for the longest of times, and you just kind of got this feeling when all the other coaches were retiring that eventually, you know, when was Mike Wilson going to do that and maybe pursue some other interest and do some other stuff. But his dedication to the game of football and what he's done throughout the years, I mean, I think it's just amazing how much time he's put in. He's had some great football teams. He had that D. Cooper and Kareem Neighbors team back in 95 that was just phenomenal. And what he's done for that program and some of those young men, I think, just says it all.
Well, my brother Ed, who also coached football for a period out at North High School, he teaches out there now. So he was well acquainted with Mike, and Mike was there probably 24 years, 125 and 135 record. Wanted to see the North Huskies get into their new stadium. He got to do that. Five sectionals, a regional, semi-state championship, and then, of course, the 5A state championship game, which you talked about. He also had a pretty successful career over in Illinois before he came to North. So we wish him a lot of luck and great health as he steps away from the gridiron. I'm sure that he'll be around for commentary or other things. He loves the game. Also this week, last night, I believe it might have happened, Bruce Dockery at Memorial, longtime girls coach there, athletic director, and in my short tenure as executive director at Memorial, got to work with Bruce for almost 2 years and did a great job, does a great job. He got his 400th win.
Yeah, he's been such an amazing coach for such a length of time, and the quality of players that he's produced, whether you look back and it was, you know, the Kate Endress type players, or the list goes on and on with lately with the Mallory Ladd and just all the players that he's produced there. I could just probably go on and on, name a bunch of girls players that have come through there, because there have been so many. For Carl Malone, who played at Purdue, and some of these names are coming to me. They got a girl playing at the University of Evansville right now. I mean, all the Division I players that he's produced, and you see why he's got those wins, because he's had talent. And yes, he had talent, but he also had to coach those girls to get them to those semis states and to get them to the state title games, and it's kind of awesome to see him get that 400th win. And he's obviously one of the best coaches, girls or boys, here in the tri-state area, regardless of sport. I think he's one of the best.
Yeah, and I got to see that firsthand. I got to see how his processes, from developing his practices to how he dealt with the girls in the feeder program, puts in a lot of time and a lot of effort as well as athletic director. And I know a couple years ago when they won the state championship, you know, he went down and had to go in the hospital and get surgery. And I jumped in, had been just doing little things for him the whole year, and I took over some of the game preparation as far as the video scouting and things like that. And it's just wonderful to work with Bruce, because he's always the same guy. He's pretty level, pretty much the same guy on and off the court, and he's done a great job. So let's jump back. You guys had a big game on your game of the week, Castle and Bossy. Castle and Harrison. So we got to preview some pretty good players from the Castle side into the Duncans of the Harrison, Simmons on Castle, and then the Duncans on Harrison. What was your perspective as you came away from that game?
You know, I thought Castle was a lot deeper than Blake Simmons. That's one of the things that kind of surprised me. They built an early lead. They got a Bryson Jenkins kid that's good, Kyle Ayton, and they go much, much deeper. They got some good young players, but also Harrison was much more than the Duncans. I mean, those three guys are obviously keys and the catalyst to that team being a very good team, but they have a lot of other talent surrounded. They got a good center, a guy that can reject some shots. They got some nice guards besides the Duncans, but those three guys are probably your bread and butter there. But Brian Spears done a tremendous job. I think he's really, since he took over for Will Wyman, he is really, I wouldn't necessarily say elevate. I think he's just kind of maintained that program to where it's at, and it's still been fantastic. And then you look on the Castle sideline, and they've done just remarkable things down there too. And I wouldn't be surprised if those two teams meet once again in the sectional. It depends on the draw, whether it's the championship or the semifinals, but it wouldn't surprise me if that is an absolute packed house, because it was packed on Friday.
You know, Chris, one thing that I've seen the Duncan I call them the triplets. They're not, but I call them the triplets. I've seen them play a couple times this year, and I've also watched them work out. One thing that I would tell our listeners, and this is my opinion, you can give me your feedback on this. I still think they're a work in progress. I think that what people see in them from a recruiting standpoint is their potential. Yes, they're good players right now. The younger sophomores have size to go along with their abilities. Ernie's more of a handles the ball, good passer, can shoot a little bit, but they're still a work in progress. So when people go to see them, I don't want them to think they're going to see maybe a lot of flash. What they're going to see is guys that have to work and hard on both ends of the court, but when they do, they get things done and they help their teams become much better.
Yeah, I think you kind of summed it up there. That's probably exactly how I feel, that these kids obviously are kind of a work in progress, and they're going to get better and better as they go. And by the time the two younger Duncans are seniors, they're going to be thicker, they're going to be stronger, and they're going to be to the level where it's going to be hard to stop them. Ernie's, like you said, I noticed his footwork. I mean, he's a fantastic guard, can dribble the ball, doesn't have to shoot to be a great player on the court. And those are the kind of things and the intangibles that I think coaches, and I'm not a coach, you're a former coach, but I think those are the kind of intangibles that coaches just absolutely love when you make other players better by your game, not necessarily by scoring, but the fact that you're around them and making those players better by giving assists, by setting picks and different things, different aspects like that. But no question, they're fundamentally sound.
Yeah, and I think another interesting thing about Evansville High School basketball right now, Chris, is we got a lot of young talent. I mean, you look at Harrison, you know, the feature players you talk about are the Duncans, sophomores and a junior. You look at Bossy, Jaquan Lyle and his cast of characters, so to speak, players on the court, they're young. You know, you've got Everhard and Auker at Memorial. You got a lot of good young players in the city right now.
Yeah, and I think every team has a couple of guys that are pretty decent, you know, this year and very competitive. And I don't know that we've seen that. I think there's been some years where we've seen some teams where you had a starting five that were a decent starting five, but I don't think you've had the depth maybe that you've had in Evansville probably in some time entering this year. I mean, it starts with Castle and Harrison. Both those teams are loaded. Then you got Bossy that's got Jaquan Lyle and a ton of players. Yes, they lost Deion Pendleton, who's now at Southern Illinois, but they just got so much talent on those teams. And I don't think we've seen the city be this talented for the past couple of years, and it's probably been a decade or so. We've had some great players come through here, but the collection of players is probably as good as it's been in a long time.
Oh, there's no question about it. And I, you know, over the course of the last 30 years, have seen a lot of the players that have come through the Evansville area, last 35. And you'll get a Derek Dowell and Miles, and you'll get one or two, but there's a bunch of young talent coming through right now. And speaking of Bossy, that'll be your game of the week. Bossy went into Memorial and just, it was a bomb that went off. I think it was 64-26 at half.
Wow.
I don't think Memorial expected that. Lyle was ferocious. They've got other players on there, but he had some dunks over people that were something, pulling up, shooting a three. And I'll tell you, the greatest asset that I think he brings to the game is his passing ability, where other guys have to extend their arm to make a pass. His wrists are so quick and strong. He's flipped that thing all over the place, but he's starting to add more offense to his repertoire, and if he can play tough on the defensive end, he is the big-time player that people think that he is. Now, they'll play Washington. And Washington, since the Zellers have left, have been a struggle to find where they're at. But I think it'll be interesting to see if Bossy will come with the attitude that we're going to work our butts off, as they talked about after the game. We're going to work hard on both ends of the court every night because that's the team we have to be. Or will they come off a great Memorial outing and kind of let up without really knowing they're letting up, and let Washington play with them? Because the Washington team coming in is really not a great team.
Yeah, they're 1-4, and I guarantee you that Coach Burkhardt is probably telling his team that you don't want to overlook this team because they're going to come in, and, you know, we were talking about the Duncan kids being fundamentally sound. I mean, you talk about Washington basketball and Gene Miller. I mean, they're going to come in there, and they're going to do the right things. I mean, they may not have the talent that they had when they had the Zellers and players like that, but they're 1-4, but they're still going to be a team that's going to do the right things, and if you're bossy, you don't want to have a letdown, like you said. And I got a story real quick about Jaquan Lyle. I was playing hoops. I was playing a little pickup basketball over at the East Side Y. I think it was 4 years ago, and we were playing with a guy, and this guy just kept hitting jumper after jumper after jumper. I mean, from outside, from like 25 feet away, and he wasn't going inside. And you could tell he like was a high school player or something. And then somebody finally told me, "Yeah, that's Lyle. He's an eighth grader." And he was an eighth grader playing with a bunch of adults. And that just kind of tells you how good that kid was. And then he was thinner. Now he's much thicker. He just presents all kinds of problems. Here's a guy that can run a point. I mean, if Dick Vitale was on here, he'd be calling him a PTP-er and all that jazz, because, I mean, he is absolutely phenomenal. I think the things he can do on the court on a night-in and night-out basis is probably as good as some of the recruits, some of the D1 recruits we've seen probably in the past 20 years here in Evansville. I mean, we're talking about the Zellers, Kyle Couric, those kind of kids. I mean, that's where Jaquan Lyle is, and there's no doubt that Washington's going to have a tough time stopping him.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. I'm sure that from a coaching standpoint, Coach Miller's telling his team, we've got to be smart with the basketball, we've got to stay in the game, and he's hoping that sometimes good teams do this, and people say this a lot really over the years about the Evansville high school teams, that they'll take some plays off, that they'll rest on a few times up and down the court. And when you do that, you give a team like a Washington who should be fundamentally sound a chance to stay in the game. And when that happens, a free throw, a turnover, a missed shot here or there, and now your game might be in jeopardy. But if the bossy team was speaking the truth in the newspaper, and these were the players talking, they understand that they've got to play hard every night. And when they do that, they're as good a team as there may be around the state. And they could be very well correct, because they're experienced, they've got a good coach, and they've got one of the best players absolutely ranked-wise in the nation in Jaquan Lyle.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think they feel probably that they left a little bit on the table last year. They had such a good crew. And, I mean, when you had Lyle, you had Deion Pendleton to that mix, who's now, like I said, the Salukis of Southern Illinois, getting some playing time there. I mean, they had such a tremendous team that was a team that probably could have won state. I'm not going to say should have, because you're a coach. You know as well that once you get to that level, every single game is going to be tough night in and night out. But I think there's a sense for that team that they thought, well, we could have probably won a state championship last year if the chips would have been put in the exact place, or if they would have done a little extra or something. So I think coming into this year, and now that it's kind of Lyle's team, I think they realize that, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them go deep into the postseason again.
Well, I think they definitely have the ability to do that. You know, you take care of the things that you can control. You can play defense. You can move the basketball. You can be prepared on every possession. Some things you can't control, the call by the official, the other team, how they're shooting the ball. But, again, there are things you can control, and when you've got some ability like they have, they can do big things. Chris, thanks for coming on. People, be sure to watch the game of the week and follow Chris throughout the season, and we'll have him back on to talk hoops in the Evansville area and whatever else is going on. But again, Chris, thanks for being on, and hope you join us again next week.
Hey, thanks for having me, as always. Reminder that since that game is Washington, a little different time tonight, game time is at 7 on Channel 7, so be sure and tune in, and hopefully we'll do it justice, and hopefully we'll have a good game.
Well, I think you'll do it justice. The game will be up to the game, but you'll do it justice. Hopefully I'll get a run over there, and I'll bring you up a Coke or something.
Okay. I'll need it. By the way, we set up way up at the top, so I have to walk those bleachers. I feel like I'm back in high school football practice.
Good workout for you. Thanks for being with us, Chris. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll have our Glory Day segment with Lagodi, great player at Lagodi, and a great individual, Chad Wade. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence?
Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's from Jasper Today, Milligan Communications, and the Milligan family. Joe, Liz, Ryan, Reed, Reese, and Ray.
Oh, hi, Roland. Come in.
I want Rudy to dress in my place, Coach. He deserves it.
Don't be ridiculous. Georgia Tech is one of the top offensive teams in the country. You're an All-American and our captain. Act like it.
I believe I am.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. We're with our Glory Days section. Had many, many, many Glory Days for the Lagodi Lions. Chad Wade. Chad, how you doing?
Not too bad, Joe. How you guys doing?
Doing great.
Chad, Coach K here. Great to talk to you. Haven't seen you in a while, but remember you running up and down that court in that Lagodi uniform with Lions or Lagodi on it, and boy, you just made it tough on anybody that had to play or coach against you.
Well, thanks a lot, Coach. I remember playing against your good teams, and obviously they were very well coached. And, you know, Lagodi always talks about the Bar Eve-Lagodi rivalry, but back then it was the Washington Catholic-Lagodi rivalry, and it was a good one.
Yeah, we had some great games, a lot of intensity, and some fiery coaches on the sideline and players that gave it all, but when they walked off the court, like yourself, just wonderful individuals, and I mean that sincerely. The one thing that I always thought about you and your teammates were you kept it in perspective. You were competitors. You were hard-nosed. But when you would see you off the court, you were personable. You had that great smile, and I'm sure you still do. And before we talk a little bit about your career in high school and Lagodi basketball and those types of things, kind of give us an idea of what you're doing now and family situation and let people kind of know what's going on for Chad Wade today.
Well, today I still live in Lagodi. I live a little bit north of town, but I married a girl from Bloomington. She went to Bloomington South, and we have two daughters, 10 and 7, and I work for Farm Bureau Insurance as an insurance agent. Been there now going on 9 years.
Well, that's awesome, and so you've got some potential basketball players coming up, and your wife's from Bloomington South. I don't want to get into that 107-2 win the Bloomington South girls team had over Indianapolis Arlington.
Yeah.
We will talk about that later on, but Chad, you know what? You were what I call the prototypical Lagodi Lions high school player, fundamental, shoot the ball, could play different positions, worked as a team, willing to sacrifice on either the offensive or defensive end for the good of the team and to do the things that Coach Butcher wanted you to do. I think that there's more to playing basketball in Lagodi than just walking on the floor. There's a sense of tradition and legacy and a type of player that you have to be, young person that you have to be in order to wear that uniform and find the success and follow the success of past teams that have gone out there. When you were growing up and you were getting to the point going into high school, I mean, what was the feeling for you to know that you were going to be a part of being a Lagodi Lions basketball player?
Well, it was important when you were young, you were growing up, and you go to the Hatchet House, of course, always an historic place to watch a game and be a part of it. And I remember the year that I really started focusing on basketball was the year that I believe it's 86 squad at Lagodi. Robert Berry, when he made the tip in against Barry, he was the last second shot. That was my first real memory of Lagodi basketball. And then, of course, as you grow up, you start in the lower grades, and where they really focused on fundamentals, maybe one or two offensive plays. That was about it. And that's where you learn teamwork at, that setting screens and playing without the ball. And you know, as you grow up and you see the high school kids and you pick you out one of those players that you say, well, I'm going to play like him. And I'll never forget, I wore the number 22 in high school. And this kind of just goes back to, you know, whenever you play a Lagodi and past players, you look at future kids and you're supporting them. And I'll never forget when I wore 22 in high school with one of the other players I never watched when I grew up was Bob Butcher. And
yeah.
I'll never forget, he had ceramic numbers of 22, and he dropped by my house one day and said, hey, I want to give those to you. And I think, you know, he saw me as a player like him, and probably not as good as he was, but he saw that I cared about Lagodi basketball. So that just kind of goes to show you that when Coach Butcher always talked about the Lagodi family, he always, and that's what he meant, is you always kind of watched out for each other, helped out the program wherever you could, and you know, that's kind of how it went.
That's a great story on the importance and the legacy building with Bob Butcher doing that for you. Bobby graduated the same time I did when I was at Jasper. In fact, we competed against each other in the regional round at that time, and Lagodi, we had a nice lead on Lagodi at the time, and Lagodi came back and beat us. A pretty good player played with us at the time was Mike Ballinger. So that's a wonderful story, and I think it gets back to the real connection that happens in a community like Lagodi and the Barib community and the Du Boises and the places like that, where people know who played and people know who are playing. And the former players are watching the present players, and the younger kids are watching the present players, and they know a little bit about the history. They understand the connection, and they reach out to help each other. And you're still doing that, because I know that Coach Butcher hosted a golf outing, and I know you were a part of helping to get that done in the community. And so that connection with Lagodi basketball, with Coach Butcher, the importance of it in the community is still there for you as well.
Oh, yeah, that's no doubt. And Coach Butcher, he wanted to start a foundation, you know, and he was starting to get the groundwork together on it. And any time that you can try to give a kid a scholarship, and he's growing that and finding different ways to do that. When he asked about that, I was going to be on board with that, because, like I say, anytime you can give back to someone who's given a lot, because, yeah, you know, a lot of people just saw him coaching on the sidelines, but every day you did learn something different from him, and a lot of it was life skills, you know, that you're going to take with you with whatever you do. But like I say, any way I can give back, I wanted to do that.
Hey,
now,
Chad, you know, when you look at your career, and we'll talk maybe about some games that stand out for you, but how about the guys you played with? You played with some pretty good guys and teammates and friends. And tell us about some of the guys you played with at your time at Lagodi.
Well, at Lagodi, my class, individually, we had Will Walker and John Eckerly, who's now in administration up at Southport. Will Walker, who worked with Norris and Love down in Jasper, Kenny Fry, who's down in Florida. You know, we had those guys in my class. We had junior year, when I was a junior, our seniors would have been Jeff Doyle, Jeff Nante, Brian Grindstaff. Of course, Kenny Fry played, Chris Bateman, Brad Howard, you know, Scott Bullock, these kind of guys, they're all real successful now, and I think that just goes back to what we learned in high school, and, you know, mostly under Jack and what he taught us and things like that. It just kind of jumped forward into our careers.
You know, it's interesting that you made that point, because I was just going to make that point. The guys you were with help to shape you, and you help to shape them, and then the Coach Butcher in the program and its tradition helps to kind of shape you as well. You come from good families, but you move on and you're successful out there. Of course, Jeff Doyle is successful in education. All these guys have done well as they've left Ligoti and Ligoti basketball, or come back and been a part of the community. And you know, the names you mentioned, all great competitors, all put some daggers in you when you're playing and coaching against them. And Joe, I know, has a question for you, but before we get to his question, Coach Butcher, winningest coach in the state of Indiana high school. I used to watch him when my dad coached against him. Then I had the wonderful privilege of coaching against him and getting a win or two at the time as well. But he means so much to a community, and a lot of times when you're playing for him or you're in the mix, you don't understand what he means until you move on. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on Coach Butcher and the legacy he left at Ligoti.
Well, I mean, I think it's very important. I mean, when you look at when people hear Ligoti, the instant thing they think about is his all-time win record. At some point, they've seen us play. I know up until last year, I don't know if I've seen him there this year, but there's a couple older gentlemen, and they live in Bloomington, and they come down here for every home game just because they like the atmosphere. You know, there's so many more other things to do now, and those on the basketball team now, leading it, Coach Wagner and Coach Smith, and those guys, they always, I know, sometimes talk about, you know, and even past players talk about the crowd and different things. But, you know, I think we still draw pretty well. Obviously, with the state championship last year, that helped them out tremendously this year as far as drawing and people interest peak up and different things. But what Coach Butcher always brought was, you know, like you said, family, I think, first. He always talked about the Ligoti family. The day that, you know, every sectional pre-sectional banquet we had you know, a past speaker, where I was a past player. You know, you always keep people, you know, I guess you could resemble it to like the Hoosiers. I mean, what Tom Crean's done to resurrect them, I mean, he's establishing that family, bringing guys back. And that's what really Coach Butcher was about, other than just the X's and the O's.
Now, Chad, you know, you were a great player for Ligoti, but you also had a sister, Leslie, that was probably, if not the best, one of the best basketball players that Ligoti High School's ever had. What did you think as far as what did you two draw each other to, in the development of your game to take it to where it was?
That's an interesting question, because normally she does get brought up when you mention a weight. She's probably the one that gets brought up first because of how successful she was in high school, but she was always, you know, her and I always went one-on-one all the time at home. We had just a small, probably 25 by 25 court and a fiberglass backboard, and then we were out there playing all the time. And I think sometimes people look at today's game and they say, well, you know, they kind of just go up and down the floor, and it wasn't as methodical as what we used to do, and maybe not as fundamental. But, again, like I said, there's so many things that kids can do now, And you know, whenever there was an old owner in town, a business owner named, his name's George Templin. He said when he moved to town from Lafayette back in the early 70s, he could drive on any street in Ligoti and see there was always someone playing basketball outside. But today he could drive down a street and not see anybody. But it's just one of those things that we just enjoyed it, the game. We always pushed each other. We'd have shooting contests. We'd play one-on-one. Yeah, she's a girl, but, you know, I think those competitions always help both of us in both directions. And I always tell a small story that one year, my senior year, I think, had 29 points in one game. That was on a Saturday, and she played on a Monday and had 40-some. And on Tuesday, I went into the gas station in town, and somebody said, well, you still can't outscore your sister, can you? So it was one of those things that you always live with, but I was happy for her and all the success that she had.
Now,
and Chad, I'm sure that 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 helped to just develop a strong bond between you two and great memories and even better memories as you go on. Speaking of the games that you played in, and what are some of the games that stand out to you, whether it be scoring, whether it just be the intensity of the game, a loss that was just difficult to deal with, or just an environment that you just loved being in?
Well, I could probably say the 89 sectional final was difficult for us. We lost to your team, of course, Coach K, and
thank you for bringing that game up.
Hey, that's not a problem, but you know, that made us focus so much more in 90. And when we went into the season, we were that much close knit. We went into the off season really focused on getting better. A lot of people had high expectations of us in 89, and we didn't fulfill those. And I think for ourselves in 90, it was for us. I mean, we really had a bond. We wanted to do well. And I can remember in the regional final against North Harrison, it seemed like we always played North Harrison. One of us, whoever won the sectional, always had to play North Harrison to move on to the semi-state. And I believe in the first half, we were down double digits. And I can remember when we came out of the locker room and all of us kind of got together. And I can remember, you know, Jeff Doyle saying, hey, we got to get going. And we overcome a double-digit deficit in that first half. That's a game that really stands out in my mind from my playing career. It was an individual game, but we actually got to the semi-state, a goal of ours to get back there, and to achieve that was really a good for us, and I know we were all ecstatic.
Well, I know that I felt like after that 89 game, which, you know, clearly we had to do everything right to win that game, and it just fell our way at the end. I think Jeff missed a shot near the baseline, and we end up holding on and winning the game. But I knew the next year that you guys were extremely focused. I don't know if you remember, but you beat us like a drum. I think we played at Bar Even. You guys just beat us. I mean, we were never in the game. That's how focused you guys were. And to watch you guys play, it wasn't my team, but just to watch you guys play was such a joy because of the way you guys all played the game. You were so interchangeable on the floor. You were all capable of doing the things that you needed to do. You, of course, had the long arms, the long, lean body, perfect for basketball and perfect for the style of ball that Coach Butcher wanted to play. You know, as you look at Ligoti today, we're in the class basketball system, and Ligoti won a state championship, which was awesome. But it seems to me, and I know you probably can't say either way, but just maybe give me your thought. It seems to me that most people around the state who know of Indiana High School basketball, know of Ligoti High School, and most of them do if they know Indiana High School basketball, see the accomplishments of Ligoti in the one-class system, a couple of state final appearances, every bit as important and impressive as the recent state championship for the boys.
And it was, and first and foremost from that team last year, all those kids and even those seniors this year that was associated with that win were, first of all, very, very good kids. And that's the main thing, is that didn't have any issues. And I think they came in last year with the same focus that we did maybe in 90 and had a goal of at least going far in the tournament, seeing where that would lead them. But to see the bond that they developed then, you know, to me is, yes, it's class basketball. Am I a fan of it? I don't know. But at the end of the day, because I grew up, these kids don't know any better, like the system that we had. So they're growing up in the system they know. And to me, that's the most important thing. And yeah, it's tough to get to the state level. You got to have some luck. You got to, you know, everybody's got to be injury free. But for what they accomplished last year was special, because like I said, they're all special kids, and for how they came together and so forth last year, and that was a good thing. That was a nice thing to see.
Yeah, I thought it was a wonderful way for the Ligoti program to step up on that championship stage. You know, Chad, before we end our conversation, you've got some young kids. They'll be growing up. How will you approach them from the standpoint of sports and basketball and being a part of the community and the legacy that you and your family have in the community from a Ligoti basketball standpoint? Do you think about that much? Do you wonder how you're going to handle your kids coming up and what direction you'll lead them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, athletics was very important in our family. And like I said, I think it helped with setting the foundation. And I really haven't pushed it on my daughters because I don't think that that's fair to the kids. But, you know, I just offered them the opportunity. My daughter's in fifth grade this year. Last year I took them and had a little fourth grade team. This year the eighth grade coach resigned there right before the season. So I've got the eighth grade girls this year at Ligoti. We're a little down. My sister actually has the fifth grade, and because we've got a daughter in second, third, fourth, and fifth, we have four daughters there. So we're trying to build something over there, you know, where they can experience that. So who knows? Maybe in a few years you'll hear the Wade name again somewhere down the line.
Well, it's exciting, and you know. For you to be back in the community and know that another generation could be coming up and playing for the Lions and you being a part of it. And as we get ready to end this segment, I just want to reiterate for our listeners what a class individual you were as a player and what a class individual you continue to be. And you might say, well, Coach, how do you know that? You're down in Evansville. I still talk to people all around the area. I ask about different players that I coached and different players that I coached against that I remember, and you're one of those guys. And Ligoti's lucky to have you in the community, and I'm sure that the people that work with you on the business side, insurance side, have a pretty good agent right there.
Well, I appreciate it very much, and you guys got a good show going. I listened to some podcasts last night to kind of get prepared for today, and I appreciate you asking me.
Well, we loved having you, and we'll probably call you again at some point if we need to talk some Ligoti Lions, so be prepared for that.
Sure will.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. We're going to go to break. Again, you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Think of your website as an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a website that doesn't produce results. Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help whip your site into shape. If you don't have a site yet, let Idea Fusion Media walk you through the entire process, from domain registration and hosting setup to the design and implementation of your site. To see how Idea Fusion Media can help you, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. Again, that's IdeaFusionMedia.com. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you.
Victor formation, cue for take.
What the hell with the fire, Billy? As long as the offense is out here, Rudy can't play.
We gotta run the play.
No, we gotta score now.
Come on,
Shoot,
Billy,
let's get a score for Rudy.
That's left game.
All right, Jimmy, this one's yours. All right, throw right. 38 halfback pass. On one. Ready?
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and I believe Kurt Guxell is with us, and he probably caught that Rudy pass right there as we come into this segment of the show. And I think we hit a first, guys. We are actually starting the segment with Kurt Guxell on time. It's amazing.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. What's happening?
Oh, not
well, I tell you, Kurt, we've got a couple of different things that – that I want to talk about with you, and one of them is not what's wrong with the Lakers. I am so sick and tired of hearing people on ESPN and everything else, what's wrong with the Lakers? What's wrong with the Lakers? I'll tell you what's wrong. They made poor personnel decisions the last couple years. They're letting their best player be their GM. They're getting old. Their coaching decisions aren't the best at this point. Nash has hurt who they thought was going to run the team, and I'm just tired of hearing what's wrong with the Lakers. I don't want to talk about them.
Well, I don't either, because that's just an absolute mess. You're 100% right.
I mean, for people with so much money and so much of a legacy out there to make the poor decisions they've made. But let's move on to the next thing. Kurt, the high school basketball season for the Southridge Raiders kicked off, and I got to catch a little bit of the call by you guys against Pike Central. And I don't know what was going on with your voice, but you sounded like a monster. Do you have a little cold or something going?
Well, you should know by now, it doesn't matter if it's the middle of summer or the middle of winter. Once a year, I get this thing, this sinus deal. I still have it. The first time it happened back in 1990 when I first started this mess, I got really worried, went to the doctor and thinking I was never going to be able to broadcast again. But he said, it has nothing to do with your voice. It's some kind of sinus drainage or whatever, and just you can't hurt it, so just keep on going. The only people that I hurt were the people that are trying to listen to it. But I'm getting over it for a big weekend of basketball. But, Coach, I appreciate you being one of the only people that listened to that game last Saturday.
Oh, no, Janet was listening, too, and she said, Kurt sounds so – I feel sad for Kurt. Don't feel bad for Kurt. He's having a ball. Whether he's in good voice or bad, he's having a ball.
Yeah, it was all right. But, it's not very much fun when you do this. I can imagine you trying to teach seven periods. I'm sure if you went through it before teaching or trying to coach with something like this down through the years. I know
you had that sinus infection and a loud voice in practice. You had some days you couldn't talk very well. But tell us about the Raiders kicking off the season, and sounds like they had a decent game. I know Pike Central is probably not the competition level that's going to push them a lot, but let's talk Raider basketball.
Well, I know they're very happy to be off to a 3-0 start, despite who they played. They did beat a good Gibson Southern team to open, then they went to Tell City and won, then they played Pike Central. They look at it as, I don't care who we're playing, we're going to get up in you defensively. We are going to press you and try to take things away. They're a big deflection type of program, as Coach Roush, you know, has a little college background and following some college coaches. That's one of their big things, take you out of the offense. And they're very well-rounded. They've got a veteran point guard, and they don't turn the ball over very much. They've got a great two-guard in Van Weber, a 6'7", four, a three-man. They bring some guys off the bench that can score. So they're pretty good. We'll see when they go to Cabby tomorrow night what happens against a team that's physical that will match them defense intense-wise. So I know they're happy with the 3-0 start, but they want to look at this game tomorrow night and see what happens.
You know, Kurt, with the game against Jasper on Saturday at the Cabby as we go into the holiday season, and I, having played – in that atmosphere, as far as the Southridge Jasper game, and then coached it as well. You know, it was always I didn't like it as a player or a coach because we had to play Boonville usually on the night before, and so you're not looking ahead, but you know you've got your county rival coming up the next night, and. During that period, I'm assuming it's close, at least close. I mean, that was an intense regular season, first half of the year game. It isn't the deciding factor of what your season's going to be, but it was bragging rights and where you were at the season. Do you see an advantage with Southridge having the opportunity to sit there for a night and prepare for Jasper, where Jasper has to prepare for two teams?
Well, you're going to probably argue with me because you're a coach and I'm just a guy that broadcasts. But the way I've looked at it for the last 10 years, that thing with Boonville, it's nothing more than it's been a scrimmage. for Jasper, and they can get some guys out of there if they want. It seems like if Jasper loses that game to Southridge, they look back and like to say Southridge didn't play or whatever the night before. But, I mean, these are high school kids, and if you can't play back-to-back, but, I mean, I'm sure it's a little bit of a factor. But, you know, I think if you're getting ready to play a county rival, you should be ready to play and just have at it. And it takes a little bit better meeting now because this is the only matchup. And I get so mad every time these teams play. Like tonight I've got Forest Park and Dubois. Tomorrow I have Jasper Southridge. And invariably during the broadcast I'll say, this is a shame this is the only matchup of the year because these teams need to be playing later on down the line. But to answer your question, you know, I think it might have a little bit to do with maybe looking forward to the game tomorrow. But I think if you're a good team, you take care of business tonight against Boonville and get on to the game on Saturday.
Let's talk about Southridge just a little bit more before we move on to another topic.
Right.
As you look, you know Jasper's physical. You've seen him play, and they lack some perimeter shooting. Southridge, who traditionally, and Kurt, I'm not saying all the time. I'm just saying traditionally was a what I would call more of a zone-oriented team than man-to-man. Of course, that changes with coaches, but much of the time that I competed against Southridge, they played a lot of zone. But Jasper's very physical. There's questions on their outside shooting. Conversely, you said Southridge loves to get up in you, take things away. Knowing what you know about Jasper physically, and I know that Southridge has some strong kids too. How's this game look physically as far as a matchup is concerned?
And like you said, I think they will want to play some man-to-man, but I think maybe they'll back off some players if they don't think they can hurt them. They may sag inside a little bit with Mark Giesler and try to defend him a little bit different and let some of those guys take their shots or maybe entice them to shoot, you know, shots that they don't think or they think they're open, but maybe they're not, kind of, you know, play off some guys on the perimeter. The thing I look at in the game tomorrow is I think Southridge, and they have the first three games, will pressure Jasper on the full court. And talking to a lot of people that know Jasper basketball to watch every game, that's what they're worried about. Southridge pressing on the full court and taking them right away from stuff that they want to do from the time that ball either goes in or they can set up that press even though they may miss on the offensive end. So I'm looking for Southridge to press them on the full court and see where they go from there. And that may dictate how they want to play the rest of the possession on the other end, whether it be a zone or maybe a sagging man-to-man defense and make Jasper beat them from the perimeter.
Well, I think that's a good observation, and that would create some difficulty. And then if Southridge can transition into the half court defensively, take away that elbow short corner area from Jasper's bigs and Giesler and Austin Hollis and take those little 12, 14-foot opportunities that are drives to the basket as well, I think it's going to cause Jasper a lot of problems. But again, Jasper's physical. If they can block mm-hmm. out and bang a little bit, maybe have some opportunities there. As you called the, I believe, the Dubois-Jasper girls game. How'd that go?
Oh, that was an outstanding game. 52-51 in overtime. Northeast Dubois won the game. The Chiefs got off to an 11-0 lead behind Nicole Dodd, one of the better players, non-Tyra Buss division in Southern Indiana, Southern Illinois. And she hit two straight threes to start the game. Chiefs are up 11. Of course, Jasper battles back through the game. The Chiefs are up three late in regulation, but Jasper sophomore Maddie Ubelhor knocks down a three to tie the game with 15 seconds to go. Dubois kind of fumbles the last possession. We go into overtime. Emily Leakin hit a three for the Chiefs to put them over the top in that overtime. And sometimes, as you know, you score in overtime early. The other team has to play catch-up the rest of the session. That's what happened. Jasper had a chance with a little shot in the paint at the end that fell off the mark in overtime, and the Chiefs get that win. But Dodd finished with 27. She is just phenomenal, about 5'11", inside, outside. And with Coach Mott, she moves constantly without the ball.
She does a great job. Shelby Murder had 20-7 for the Wildcats. And those two teams, and you can see it right now, are going to be just like they always are later on in February, right there in the tournament hunt to go deep because of the way they're coached, the way they play, the culture of the programs. I mean, it was a really, really good early season basketball matchup. And again, I said it last night, too bad these two teams couldn't play later on. So it was really, really good at Cabbie. And I put some pictures up for the JV game, but by the time that thing started in the varsity, there was a one hell of a crowd there for those two teams last night.
Well, that's great, because I know I had commented on one of the pictures and I didn't realize it was early, and I thought the crowd was a little slim. And just for our listeners who are wondering why this game was important, well, Northeast Dubois is right up. Are they number one in Class A, or are pretty close, aren't they?
They're third. You know,
third, and Jasper going into that game, I believe, had one loss. Had lost it against an outstanding Mount Carmel team as an exceptional player. So it was a big game as far as two solid programs. And if you know the history of Coach Madai's with Northeast Dubois, former boys coach, former player there, did a great job as a boys coach, was out for a while, came back, took the girls program over, and has just taken it meteorically up to just be one of the best programs, well, definitely in this part of the state, but also in Class A ball. So that's a great tune-up for the weekend and the games that are going on. Let's jump over. We've got Butler, IU. We had Michael Lewis on at the beginning of the show. He's talking about Butler and IU. You know, one of the things that I pointed out to Michael, which, of course, he already knows. He's watched enough tape. My concern is I think that Butler is going to be well-prepared, but I think the difficulty is going to be threefold for them. One, IU is their quickness, their athletic ability, and their depth. I think that will cause Butler some problems, especially if Butler gets in foul trouble early.
I think you're right, and I think that IU's got to have to watch out for. People don't realize this. When they think Butler, they think of those threes going up, but those guys are so physically strong. Andrew Smith is a guy that plays strong. Several other of those guys inside the paint defend strong. Even the guards are very strong, and they're very physical. Butler just wears on you. And that's something that Cody Zeller is going to have to get used to tomorrow, is they're going to defend him better than anybody else they played all year. My concern for Butler is seeing Indiana, you know, chase them off the three-point line. They're not going to let Kellen Dunham or Ronnie Clark shoot a lot of open or get a lot of open looks. If they do, it's going to be well designed by Stevens and Coach Lewis and those guys. But that's the thing that I think is going to be the key to the game. Indiana just defending that three and covering up on the inside on Andrew Smith. But I mean, you know, after watching all these bad games against all these bad teams, it's going to be great at 2 o'clock tomorrow at Panthers Life. I mean, it's going to be great.
It is going to be good, and I'll tell you.
I'll watch it.
You make good points, and I think the key on – I've got to believe that Butler's going to come out and they're going to make Cody Zeller offensively have to do something, not just rebound and put back in or shoot free throws. I think they're going to – when he gets those looks, they're going to make him have to do something with the basketball, and they're going to be on him, bumping him, making him move, trying to get him in a position that maybe he hasn't been in yet this year. And on the other side, I think that Butler, when they come off that ball screen, which they love to do, screen on the ball, they got to be willing to make that next pass. And listen to this, Kurt, not just the next pass, but the next pass to find those shooters open. And if I think if they can make the second pass off the ball screen, not the first one, the second pass, I think they can find some opportunities. But they got to handle the waves of pressure who's going to give them, and they are, you said it best, they're not going to let them sit on that three-point line. They're going to have to earn every one of those.
Right, yep. Make that extra pass. You mentioned that. They'll go for that ball screen. They may get the slip. They may get the pop off that ball screen. But then when Indiana covers that real quick, whether they go underneath it or go over the top, take that ball around the other side in reverse and see what they get. Because, again, if you got a couple of shooters like they do in Clark and Dunham, even against the best defense, a good, well-coached team like Bulldogs are, may find a way to get some shots. I mean, the force, you can't take away everything. Even Indiana, a team that's good, can't take away everything. So, again, that's why, and like Michael said, that's why on that day, that game, anything can happen. It's going to be really good.
Now, this is Joe gets to give an opinion here. A pretty insightful opinion, if I say so myself. In some big games, too, IU kind of forgets Cody Zeller's on the floor, i.e. last year's second half against Kentucky. Do you see Coach K, Gook, have you seen that trend at all this season?
Well, I've seen sometimes where other guys take open shots, and when there are five good offensive players out there and shots are equally distributed, maybe that is the case, but it would behoove them to get the ball into Cody if he's down low open and posting up hard. I mean, but, you know, if the other shots are there, I guess they need to take them too. But sometimes you're right, Joe, they kind of get away from, and the kids do, and that's what happens sometimes.
I'd like to see him get a lot of touches, not just a one touch, but
yeah,
two touch, even if it's passing it out. I did see a little bit of that at the Barclay Classic, but I found out that Cody wasn't feeling well. I haven't seen as much of it since then, but it'll be something interesting to watch if, now I'm saying if, Butler can do defensively the things that they need to do at this point in the season against an IU team who I think, you know, they haven't played the best schedule but is playing pretty well. Guys, before we hit another topic, I got a question that was sent to me for Joe. This is
okay.
For Joe.
It
says that why does Joe dislike Matt Painter so much? Can he do better? That's from Bob in Jasper.
Bob, I don't know. I'm an equal opportunity guy. If I feel like he's doing a good job, I'll tell him he's doing a good job. I do the same thing with Marvin Lewis of the Bengals. You know, if you read my blog spot on our new website, I say that I'm a Jasper, Purdue, a Cincinnati Bengal, Indiana Pacers, and a New York Yankee fan, and I'll praise him and I'll rip him. And right now, he deserves to be ripped a little bit, and you know, so that's my answer, and I'm sticking to it. So,
well, that's a good answer, Joe. But after that mess up there at Eastern Michigan, you know, these college coaches will tell you, or they should, it's all about recruiting, and they've got some players. Either they're very young or they're just not very good. Because Matt Painter didn't take a dumb pill all of a sudden. That
no,
coach, they got good, sound philosophies on the floor. Some of his assistants left because that goes back to your guy Burke, who didn't pay the guys. That's the guy that they need to be pointing some fingers at. I'm a big Matt Painter fan.
Well, assistant,
and
the head coach assembles it. But his assistants have to get him in positions on some of this recruiting to close the deal. And, you know, Tom Crean isn't out talking to every player at the beginning. His assistant coaches get him in a position, and he comes in and helps get the deal closed. And Matt's just going to have to talk to his assistant. I mean, that they don't just help you in practice and on the floor. They help you find players. That's a major part of their responsibility. Joe, one more question from Bob. He says he listened last week, and he said, Joe said Coach Tressel just lied. Who hasn't told a lie? What about you, Coach K? Is lying okay? It seems to be for Joe.
Well, Bob, that is directed towards me. Bob, have you never told a lie? If you say you haven't told a lie, then you're lying. I'm going to stop it right
there.
It's not okay, but what I'm saying is people are saying he's a cheater. He is not a cheater. He lied. He lied about something. He didn't actually put the tattoos on. Hey, guys, real fast, though. We've got about 90 seconds before we'll be going podcast only. And real quick, I wanted to bring up iDiffusion Media, one of our sponsors, is having a contest. If you like the post that's on iDiffusion Media about winning a free website for your business or your nonprofit organization, and then also go and like his page, and it gets to 150 likes before Christmas, he is giving away a free 5-page website to a business or organization. So wanted to get that in real fast before we've got about 60 seconds.
And our listeners, go take advantage of that. They need to go there and take advantage of that. And remember, listeners, we will remain through the live show on podcast, so come back and listen to the podcast.
So I just wanted to get that in real fast while we were live. I want to talk about 107-2.
Okay. And if Kurt doesn't remember, that's the Bloomington South team that beat Indianapolis Arlington 107-2. And I made it pretty clear in my statement, and I didn't do it without taking some time and thinking about it before I posted some comments on Facebook. And then it's also on my blog at the CoachKandJoeShow.weebly.com. We have a blog, and I hear, Kurt, you may join us in blog status on our website, which we would love. But I want to make it clear, I am not condemning the players. I'm not condemning the players. Moms and dads, I'm not condemning the players. I'm not calling for anyone to be fired. I'm not doing that either. I'm not Joe. I am simply saying that there are many, many, many better ways to handle that situation, from doing the things I talked about to ending the game to, if they knew it was going to be difficult to begin with, having the freshman or JV team playing. But I'm telling you, to say that it would have been more embarrassing to hold the ball, absolutely not. I've been on both sides, never in a game like that, but absolutely not. To hold the ball and work on your basketball in a different way, all coaches know that that can be done.
Well, there's a difference between winning a game and embarrassing another team. And, I think the athletic director's got to question his coach about it. I mean, if he didn't have anything, do you not think so? 107-2.
Well, the administrators dropped the ball on this altogether. By scheduling this game to begin with, I guess Arlington is starting up again. And, I mean, everybody, every coach in the world that's worth his salt, which the guy at Bloomington South is because he's a good coach, knows who you're going to play in the next couple of weeks. Have you not saw tape? Have you not talked to other people? And then you go from there and how you're going to approach this. I mean, this coach knows you can take 3 minutes at a time off the clock in a game, and the average fan sitting up in the stands has no idea what you're doing, and all of a sudden there's 3 or 4 minutes off the clock because you've cut guys through the, or girls or guys through the lane, you've passed the ball around the perimeter, and handle it that way. I mean, and if you take a shot, you take a shot or whatever. But I think the ball was dropped before the bus even pulled up at the gym on that whole deal. And that, I mean, we've all seen this blowout before.
The other thing about it is, you know, somebody made the statement, and I won't give them credit for the article, that, you know, this has happened before. This isn't the first time. And that makes it even worse, in my opinion, because if it's happened recently in the last few years, then all coaches know about it. And so they've had to think to themselves, how would I handle this situation if it happened to me or I was in a position that it was happening, my team doing it to another team? I don't think we're that contained that we don't think about those things. I mean, the one thing I learned growing up with my father as a coach and just in the coaching profession is that at some point you have to understand the other teams out over there and you have to know when to say when. And I said in my blog, it wasn't 90-39. It wasn't 80-53. Mm-hmm. It wasn't 52-23. It was 107-2. And it was 1 point at halftime. And guys, I just think, Kurt, you're right. It started way before the game happened. But somewhere you walk over to that coach, maybe at halftime, and you say, hey, you know what? We're going to pull the ball out. We're not going to steal the ball. We're not going to transition. If you guys get a layup, we're probably going to let you take it to the basket. But we're going to work on our game. We're just not going to look to do these things where we would score easily. Just professional courtesy that, you know what, no one would have known about except the two coaches.
Right, because everybody in the nation knows about this now. But the 100 people in those stands, it may have looked stupid or it may have looked weird as a basketball fan standpoint to see somebody do that. But that's where it would have been left it would have been left in the gym that night. It wouldn't have been national news the next day if they would have handled it like Coach said they handled it. And they could have ran the clock. I mean, doing football all the time when bad high school teams play good high school teams. They could have done it that way. But, you know, it just makes you wonder. I mean, you know, maybe Arlington's not totally without fault in this whole deal as well. Could they call Bloomington South and say, you know, we're just not – maybe we can find some other teams to play. Maybe you not need to come. Maybe you need to bring different players. With the phone, the internet, with the email, with the Twitter, with the Facebook, get it done before you even show up at the game.
Well, Arlington should play a JV schedule with their roster
like when they start football, like Forest Park football did, or these teams that start football. There's all kinds of different things. Because you can't tell me that those Arlington girls were looking forward to playing Bloomington South. And not have any idea what could might happen in that 32 minutes of basketball.
I don't want anybody fired over it, and I don't want to berate it too much, but I think it's important for our listeners and for young people and for coaches in general. And I know I've been in games where I got beat pretty good, and I was in games where I'm sure the other team felt like we may have poured it on, but never anything close to that, to this kind of score. Hey, Kurt, I believe there's a young man from Forest Park that was playing for Marion on their football squad. How is the season? How things end up for Marion?
No, it was great. Last night they won the NAIA National Championship down in Rome, Georgia. And if you're not familiar with Marion University, it used to be Marion College up on Indianapolis 36th Street, just outside the track area. They've had a long time good athletic program. John Grimes, he's coached basketball for the longest time, and we've had several athletes from this area go up there to play sports and whatnot. But Nathan Jones, an interesting story. They started Forest Park football. He was one of the first players, just developed. He signs a national letter of intent to go to Marion University, who just 6 years ago started their program, and he was kind of in on the second or third year of that ground floor of that program, and he just continued to get better and better. He was a great high school player. He could have played for any team around here. Nevertheless, he gets a college scholarship, plays a lot down through his career, and last night he capped his career off by catching 5 passes for 99 yards, a 61-yard touchdown pass that gave Marion the lead, although Morningside came back to tie the game, and Marion won it on a field goal in overtime after Marion stopped Morningside on the downs in the overtime. All they had to do was kick the field goal, and they did. But it was great for Nathan Jones because he's a great kid. Forest Park's first ever college football player. Now they've had several. They've had more college football players than anybody else in DuBois County the last few years. But it was neat for Nathan. Marion, just a great thing for them because obviously that coach, and it's actually Ted Karras, Alex Karras' nephew, Karras used to coach at Rose Holman, came over to start the program at Marion. No field, no this, no that. They played at high school venues. Now they have their own field, and it's great on Marion's campus, turf and everything. But they were able to win the national championship, and they've got a lot of good recruits from the Indianapolis area. And that was really cool. It was on CBS Sports Network. A lot of area fans got to see Nathan play. I know it's a long answer to a short question, but you know, people are excited about it, and that's pretty cool.
And they should be excited. And you know what else it proves, Kurt? You can win a national championship. It doesn't have to be Division I. You know, you can go and play at some of these different levels, 2, 3, whatever, NAIA. These are great competitive schools, great programs, do wonderful things, and you get to walk out of there saying, I was part of a national championship. The story for him is so great, because he started in a startup football situation and basically went into a startup football situation, and both of those programs had success while he was there. And Marion University, as you explained great about them, for the last decade, from academics to fundraising to whatever they've been doing, they've been getting it done the right way. And it's just it's a beautiful campus, and they've got it on the ball there. It's probably one of the best kept secrets in the state of Indiana.
Well, you're right, and I mentioned John Grimes, who coached basketball there for the longest time. You know, went through Indiana, recruited all the guys that may have not been big enough, strong enough to play Division I or Division II basketball, but now they have Todd Licklider, who helped build this Butler thing before Brad Stevens took over, went to Iowa after Butler. Didn't work out at Iowa for a lot of different reasons, but not every school will have a caliber of coach like Todd Licklider coaching them. So the Maryland administration gets it. They know that they boosted enrollment by starting football, and it's a nice thing for the state of Indiana and a nice thing for Nathan Jones. Not only did he get a full-ride football scholarship, didn't have any college bills, but he's a national champion now.
That's so awesome. Kurt, real quick, as we head at the end of the show and getting close there, and Joe, as you deserve the last word, and I'll let you get that. Hey, Kurt, back to IU Butler. What do we expect? I think Jerkin and Perea are eligible for this game, correct?
Yes, they are.
So what do you in, I mean, I know what I'm expecting, but as you look at this game and where it's at, what's going on, what do you expect to see, or how much of them, or what do you expect to see with Jerkin and Perea?
Well, that's interesting, Coach. The way Indiana's been rolling, I was thinking, well, maybe they won't play as much, or maybe you'll throw them right in to see where they are. But, I really can't tell you. I know it's a bad answer to your question. But if this is the early stages of this Kareem turnaround, maybe throw some right in there and let all the fans go ooh and ah or whatever. But I don't know. I think first and foremost, they're going to try to beat Butler. And if those guys can help them do that in, spot playing time, so be it. But I don't expect some, in the first TV timeout to run those guys out there. But, you may know different or heard different. I don't know. But I think slowly but surely they'll get mixed in. But on the flip side, whose minutes are they going to take?
Yeah, and that's a good question. But I will tell you, with Etherington out and the things that we've got there, from my decision as a coach, they've been practicing. They've been a part of it. I play them, and I play them where I believe that they need to be inserted and where I think they can help us in this game. But I'm not concerned about whether it's their first competition or not. I'm just concerned that are they ready to go, and I believe they are, and let's get them out there and let's get them playing. We'll see how they handle it when they get on the floor. Are they too emotionally ready? Are they too pumped? Are they going too quick? You're going to have a little of that no matter what. But, you need to get them out there and you need to get their feet wet. And hey, what a better venue to do that. It's not Assembly Hall, but it's going to be very much a pro IU crowd.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a big Indiana crowd. And then you got Notre Dame and Purdue. And I'm sure Matt Painter after exams this week. And, that's the thing about coaching. You get it handed to you, and anybody that's a competitor – like Taylor is and like those guys should be, they can't wait to face Notre Dame, a team that is going to be pretty good in game two and a team that beat Kentucky earlier. So I'm sure Painter and the boys, they couldn't wait since coming back from Ypsilanti to get back out there and they'll be able to do it on a big stage tomorrow.
And you hit on a great point that Michael brought up earlier when he talked about getting ready for their workout today. They had a bunch of players coming out of exams. They had 9 o'clock exams. So we forget that these guys are college students as well, and they're in the middle of the exam period for this first semester. I know my son Josh just got home from IU last night. So these guys have been having to prepare for basketball, but they've also been having to prepare for their exams. And the teams, the programs that care – coaches that care, and we're talking about coaches that do, want to make sure they do well there as well. So the mental part plays in this a little bit, at least going into tomorrow. Joe, I don't ever want to leave you out. I feel like you think I do. You know my love for you is great. What do you want to add, buddy?
Well, last week was great when I didn't get to talk last half hour because I actually finished last month's Jasper today and had it online before it was over, so I was on a roll. So if I have something to say, I'll say it. But the one thing I want to say, and I'm sure that you guys will back me on this, is, you know, you've got Jasper Boonville, big game tonight, but you also have Jasper Southridge. And, you know, Jasper Southridge, I'd like to see a lot of gold and black and a lot of red and black in that gym and pack that place. And, you know, let's not leave any seats empty tomorrow night. Let's, you know, and then tonight also is just a prelude to that game. It's a big conference game, and, you know, people go out and watch the – we've talked about this. I think Kurt's the first one to have brought it up. You know, what's it cost, $5 to get into a game? Pretty good value, you know?
Yeah. And Aiden, last night nobody was asking for their money back at that Chief Jasper girls game. And here's what's going to happen tonight. I'm doing Forest Park and Northeast Du Bois at Beekler. That place is going to be packed.
Yep.
Because those two schools have a passion. They have a culture for following basketball. There should be no reason why Cabby shouldn't be close to being filled tomorrow. A, it's a smaller venue. And two, it's Jasper and Southridge. No matter who you root for, both those teams are going to be going out there and playing their butts off. And, again, I'm going to be hot if that place isn't full tomorrow.
My plan is to be up at the Cabby tomorrow night for that Saturday game. With Southridge and Jasper, having played in that and coached in that, it's an intense night for the players and the coaches. And don't let them kid you, December 15th or not, that is an intense game. And I love it when the fans go in there and they just let loose of all their ties and just say, I'm a Jasper fan, I'm a Raider fan, and they go at it. And the more that's in there, the better. And I hope that when I walk in there, I don't have a place to sit. I hope I have to stand.
Well, you can sit by us, Kenny. Scott Solomon and I would love to have you.
Well, thanks a lot, Kurt. I'll probably bring a Coke or something up to you.
You know,
yeah, right. He'll charge
you
double.
That's the thing I talked about earlier. You know, and you participated as a coach, and maybe if you're going to see him later on, you don't empty the bucket, so to speak, and put everything in. But now there's no reason not to play this game like it's a March type of game, because you're not going to have to play each other, you know, down the line. So let it all go. And a lot of times, it used to be this way. It's not like this anymore. It was always the last game before the break, and you never wanted to go into that Christmas break on a bad note or not playing well. But I know now there's games after that because we're Christmas balls. But, again, in all facets, fans, players, coaches, there's no reason for this not to be a big night and a big opportunity to show that this area still likes high school basketball.
Oh, Kurt, you just brought a memory up. You know, growing up in a house that you know, my dad coached, and then coming through as a player and then coming back and coaching in it. You know, Christmas went a lot better when you won that game. And fortunately, six out of seven times I went over there or played in that game with teams, and we won those games. As a player, I think we won two out of three. And growing up, I think my dad had similar success. But I can tell you, when you lose that game, it's not the end of the world. I understand that. But it's like you just found out Santa Claus may not be real. It just makes it a little bit tougher to find that enthusiasm as you go into the holidays. It really is an intense game. At least it always was for me and the people that we were around, and I got to believe it's still that way.
Well, it is to a certain extent, but probably not as much as you and I remember it, and I wish you would get back to that. And hopefully, and I know the guys that are playing in it now, they're capable of having it ramp up because they're good competitors on both sides. So hopefully we'll all like what we see tomorrow.
Yep. And let's just go out and support. Also, one last thing, just got a text from Tom Deanhart, our friend at Big Ten Network. And I think here in the future, we're also going to be having Jerry Palm of the CBS Bracketology on the Coach K and Joe show. I just thought I'd break that breaking news that
awesome.
Is spreading about the Coach K and Joe show.
You know what? Kurt ought to give us a plug on his games once in a while and let people know he's going to blog with us. And we have a really, really good show. We have probably we are the best kept secret. The guests we have, the topics, and you know, we're willing to say some things that aren't popular, especially Joe. But to have certain the different people on, Tom Dienhart, and being able to call in some of those guys, we got a good show, and I just hope more people get to know about it and participate in the show, because that's when it gets fun, when we get the questions and the comments, and nothing hurts our feelings. It shakes us a little bit, but nothing hurts our feelings.
That's right.
Any predictions that we need to make, Joe?
No. we know Notre Dame is going to beat Purdue, and IU Butler. I don't want to pick that one because you know I don't, because we had Michael Lewis on today, so you know I don't feel right picking that one.
I'm going to sound wishy-washy like everybody else does, and mamby-pamby like everybody else does. But during that IU Butler game tomorrow, I will honestly be happy no matter who wins that tomorrow.
It destroys the IU season in any way, shape, or form, and I think it would be wonderful for Butler and vice versa. So I agree. Hey, last question I have, and then we can end this thing. It's for Kurt.
Yeah.
Kurt, national championship game in football, BCS championship. Do you wish it was just a little bit earlier, sooner?
Well, yeah.
January 7th.
Well, I don't know if we've talked about it before. We might have. That would be like in early April, playing your semifinal game in the NCAA tournament and then waiting another month to play the championship game that usually takes place 2 days later. I mean, what sport, you know, you finish the National League Championship Series, waiting a month to play the World Series? I mean, it's just typical along the lines of what college football is. It's different than anything else on a daily basis, and it's what it is in this. Yes, certainly. Wish it was the next week. Tomorrow.
All right, Joe. I just wish everybody a great weekend and stay blessed, and you can take us out.
Okay, you've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. We the podcast is already up on the website. That is www.coachkandjoeshow.weebly.com. Weebly is Weebly. For Kurt Guxell and for Coach K, this is Joe Milligan. We'll see you next week.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.